This is SaaS Scaled, the podcast where data meets action with host Armon Shrocky. Each week, Armon will be sitting down with CEOs and industry leaders from the technology sector, giving you the insight to innovate without reinventing the wheel. They'll discuss challenges, best practices, and how to identify the right metrics. So if you want to get to market faster and in a way that matters, then subscribe and join us every week as we discuss SaaS Scale. This episode is brought to you by Curve, the modern no-code analytics solution, the tools you need to take action with your data on a platform built for maximum scalability, security, and cost efficiencies. If you're ready to reduce complexity and dramatically lower costs, then contact us today at curve.com. That's Q-R-V-E-Y.com.
Hello, welcome to another episode of SaaS Scaled. And I'm so pleased to have Matt Clark with me at this episode. Very welcome to the show, Matt.
Thank you, Armon. Appreciate the opportunity to be on the show.
Our pleasure. Could you please tell us a little bit about yourself and about the company, and then we'll start from there.
Yeah, sure. So, name is Matt Clark, president and CEO of CoreCentric. The business itself has existed for 25 plus years, and I've been around for really most of that journey. So got into the business in the very early days and have been part of the evolution that takes place over a period of time like that for a business that has grown and evolved quite a bit. So, you know, really have at different points in my career worn many different hats, as you would expect, from the early days to my point as CEO now. So feel like that's given me great insights into kind of all elements of the business and how it works, and has enabled me to be, you know, a good leader for where we're at and where we're going as a company. Company itself has been profitable every year since inception. Really operate in the B2B commerce space. So we're providing solutions to both sides of B2B. So we work with the sell side of B2B and the buy side of B2B, and really trying to optimize everything that they do from a procurement, accounts payable, and accounts receivable perspective. So the B2B world is full of friction. I'd say B2C is way further ahead when it comes to how commerce is conducted. B2B tends to be a lot more complex, a lot of friction when it comes to technologies talking to each other, when it comes to payment methodologies, payment modalities. And so we've really, you know, built our business around kind of three main pillars, which is really great SaaS technology that's the foundation of everything we do. And then we layer on top of that managed and advisory services to complement that technology, as well as kind of unique and differentiated payment capabilities. So willingness and ability to take trade finance positions on B2B transactions, willing to pay suppliers differently than we're getting paid by buyers, but really being that kind of black box in the middle that can provide these turnkey solutions that, you know, help businesses deal with all the challenges that they're dealing with and all the friction that they're dealing with in today's environment. So we're a global company, physical presence here in North America, which is where I'm based, but also offices in France and in the UK. And we have customers that kind of span the entire globe and that are using our solutions all over the world. So that's kind of the top side view of CoreCentric.
That's great. Well, you have been very humble. Actually, your company size is really good. Your accomplishments, fantastic. Congratulations. And definitely we are going to, you know, have a great discussion, learning from many points that you have experienced. So it's not an easy route. Anybody who has been one way or the other involved in any SaaS business and growing the business knows that, you know, getting to that point and growing the business and staying profitable is not, and it's a very tall order. So if you want to do all of them at the same time. So one of the topics that we discussed, and you have brought it up, and I know that it's near and dear to the heart of many people in the business, in software business, is, hey, what is the right level of really growth versus, you know, profitability? Should I burn more cash? It might be a mathematical question, but at heart, it's way more complicated than that when you combine it with other dimensions. I would love to, you know, hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah. So I think that's a great question. And I think it's a question that a lot of leaders of technology businesses, SaaS businesses are faced with on probably a daily basis. And I think, the perspective I have and what I see out there, in the marketplace is you really have kind of two dynamics at play when you talk about this topic. One would be, you have companies that historically, have taken very extreme, stream views on either one of those, either one of those ends of the spectrum. So, you have companies that, very openly will say, look, growth at all costs, we're going to be 100% focused on, whatever we got to do to drive growth within reason. And that becomes part of the DNA of the organization. And then you have the alternative view, which probably more aligns to, how we've grown and evolved the company, which is more of that kind of, having profitability, as a kind of key driver of everything we do, but not to say that that gets in the way of us being able to grow, but, that gets embedded in the DNA too. So I think what becomes interesting is when companies, have to pivot from one of those ends of the spectrum to either a more kind of balanced approach or even, work themselves way to the other extreme. And often that's, driven by, investor activity, investment viewpoints, what they're trying to do more strategically as a business in the long term. But I find that it becomes a big challenge to make that pivot because it does become, whatever path you choose, it does become kind of embedded in your DNA. And whenever you try to make that pivot, it's easier said than done because folks are used to operating in a certain way and then you pivot and, maybe it's, a different way in which, even the leaders of the organization, the executives of the organization are used to operating in. So I'd say, one piece of advice I would give is it's very important to be very clear on what your, what your methodology is, what your driving, forces on this topic, because if you leave it in a confused state, then you've got portions of your organization that have this, we got to grow at all costs mindset. You might have other portions of the organization that are having a different mindset. And then that just gets you, out of balance, as you try to grow and scale the business. And so I think being very transparent, from a leadership perspective as to, hey, this is our position when it comes to the balance of growth and profitability. This is why, nothing's written in blood, right? So that can change, as conditions change, but being very open, being very transparent, having those kinds of discussions with your leadership team and beyond, to make sure there's alignment, there's an understanding of, why you're operating the way that you're operating in. And then I think there's also got to be that awareness of what the macro conditions are. And that can be very much driven by the investment community. So you go through cycles where, growth is valued over everything else. And then you go through cycles that I think we're seeing in more recent days here where there's, been people, investors that have gotten burned on this, okay, we're going to invest in growth. We're going to assume we can get it to profitability over time. And that's why it's an attractive investment for us. You get folks that get burned by that and then the market corrects itself, right? The valuations get outsized. People have, missed expectations on what's going to happen with those investments. And then, the market tends to shift. So I think that's my other piece of advice is, really keeping a pulse on the investment community, understanding, how businesses in certain sectors are being viewed. And then that doesn't have to be the single driving force for how you, build your strategy around growth and profitability, but it's a data point that you really need to understand. And then also from a kind of macro perspective, understanding the trends, especially in technology, and when you have to, make investments to say, okay, maybe the way we're doing things isn't leveraging the latest and greatest technologies. Maybe we got to take one step back on profitability in order to take two steps forward. Is some of the things that I think have been helpful as we've navigated all these different kind of macro cycles, as well as our own business cycles, when it comes to balancing growth and profitability.
No, great points made here. Absolutely. So in your case, that you are doing, with your company, with your business, you are in a market that, as you explained to me, it's a very special kind of situation, right? So you are at the point that in a market that essentially you are doing very specialized work. And how does it impact that kind of, mentality that And if some other SaaS companies feel the same, that what we do, we are very specialized in particular domains, does it change that equation versus a company that feels like I'm in a mature market, but a big market and I need to move fast? How do you see that may play a role in this kind of equation?
Yeah, I think you make a really good point there. I mean, it's a big role in the equation because, you know, you have to pick your battles, I guess is the way I would describe it, right? So I think there's often in the SaaS world, somewhat of a me too mentality. It's like, you know, we like to look around at competitors in our space. And like you said, some of them feel like their strength resides in certain capabilities or certain aspects of their solution. And what we've had to really do as a business is, you know, really, you know, identify who we are and what we stand for and what we think is the best way to provide value to our customers and not get so caught up in the kind of arms race that, you know, some folks, because you can spend all your time and your investments and your money trying to play catch up on something that is a strength for somebody else in the marketplace. By the time you do that, you know, they've moved forward and now you're still not caught up, right? And you're playing that game of kind of chasing those, you know, those competitors on the places where they might be having strength, right? So the way we've decided to kind of distill that is really step back and say, what is going to deliver the best outcomes for our customers? What are our customers looking for? What are the pain points they're experiencing? What might have been the disappointment or the missed expectations with other solution providers that they've worked with in the past? And really focus our attention on that versus you always got to be aware of what your competition's doing and the capabilities they have, but not get into this kind of arms race mentality. And so that's why we've built our business the way we have in terms of not just, you know, having great technology, but complementing it with those managed and advisory services and those business payment capabilities so that we can really provide turnkey solutions that really, at the end of the day, you know, lower the stress for our customers. It's stressful, right? There's so many solutions out there. There's so many ways that a company could go to achieve what they're looking to achieve, but really kind of centering in on that kind of diagnose before you prescribe mentality, listening to the customers, understanding, making them feel like you're building one size fit one solutions versus one size fits all. Now, that doesn't mean we're trying to go out and customize everything for every single customer, but there's ways in which you can combine technology and services and payment capabilities to create that one size fits one feeling for a customer or a prospect and focus our energy and our efforts and our investments on being able to deliver on that, you know, promise versus saying, okay, we want to make sure that this particular feature or function demos as well or better than a competitor. So it's a different mentality, not easy to execute, but one that we have found to be very beneficial for us as we've evolved our business.
And you are at the position today that based on what you have gone through during the course of years, having solid revenue, profitability, number of customers being established, that's great, has worked well. But let's think of an imaginary situation, very hypothetical, of course, that you have $500 million and you go 20 years back. Do you think in such a case, you would be in a position today that is way different than you are now that could justify burning that much kind of cash or any other number, you know, amount of cash that you may think, or you would do exactly the same you did today? And you will go and you will pick the path of profitability and getting, you know, in this position.
I think that's a wonderful question. I think, you know, my initial reaction to that is I think you always would do things differently, you know, because you learn so much, you know, through the ups and downs of growing and evolving a business. I think the things that, you know, I would probably do differently if I could go back in time is make more investments in, you know, setting a company up for where we're going versus where we're at a given point in time. And so I think I see this a lot. I saw it with our own business. I think companies wait too long to be thinking bigger, you know, so you're doing that brick by brick, which is really important. You're trying to get to that kind of critical mass and critical scale. But then it becomes very reactionary, right? So then you have success, you add more customers, but then you're playing this catch-up game of, all right, well, now we gotta, you know, invest more in our technology, or now we gotta invest more in our people, or now we gotta have a more mature leadership team. All of those things, I think, I know we probably waited too long, in my view, to action against. And I see that as a pattern that I see with companies that I sit on, you know, technology companies I sit on the board on that are early stages. You know, that's kind of the mantra I give them. It's like, okay, if you're at 5 million, you know, a million of revenue right now, or 5 million or 10 million, what is your business going to have to look like when you're, you know, at 20 million, when you're at 50 million, when you're at 100 million? And again, you don't want to get too far ahead of that, but I see a very, you know, very repeated pattern of people being more reactionary than proactive on that front. And playing catch up is always so hard to do because you're trying to, you know, fly the plane while you're changing out the engine in midair. And that's never easy to do. And I think that ultimately over time results in you spending, you know, more money to play catch up than if you would have more methodically and proactively kind of mapped that out. So I think it's really important to not just look at, you know, what's on your plate for this coming year or even the next year, but taking that time as a leadership team to say, okay, what's our big, hairy, audacious goal? You know, our 5-7 year out there, big, hairy, audacious goal. And then start to walk backwards from there to say, okay, if that's our big, hairy, audacious goal, then what does the business need to look like 3 years from now to be on track for that? And then you take that 3 year view and say, okay, then what do we got to do this year to put us on track for that 3 year view? And so just kind of changes the way in which your leadership team thinks about, you know, the here and now, but also at the same time thinking about what's on the horizon and where you want to be, you know, 3, 5, 7 years down the road.
I understand you provide software and you provide services, as you mentioned. Are you providing both software and services as subscription, as a service in a way, or one of them is just subscription? How does it, I just wanted to understand the subscription model.
Sure.
What you guys do.
Yeah, so our relationships kind of take kind of three different flavors to keep it as simple as possible. So we have a lot of engagements with customers where it's software only, you know, pure software. They're leveraging our technology. They're doing everything themselves with our technology. They don't need any advisory or managed services. They don't need any payment capabilities. So that tends to be more of a kind of pure, you know, SaaS model, you know, SaaS fees, seat licenses, things of that nature that are kind of traditional in SaaS. Then you have situations where we're complementing our software with managed and advisory services. And what we try to do is create, you know, some semblance of, you know, bundling there to say like, look, we're going to bring you this value proposition that includes our technology, but it also includes our managed and advisory services. And how can we package that in an easily digestible way, you know, that provides, you know, kind of clear path to ROI for our customers and what we like to focus on, which are kind of guaranteed outcomes, right? So, you know, a lot of companies will talk about, I would say, hypothetical outcomes, like if you use our technology, these are the benefits you should get. We like to get more committed with our customers and say, look, if you use our software as well as, you know, wrap our services around it, there's some outcomes we can guarantee for you because we can control more of those outcomes the more involved we are. And so aligning, you know, how those financial models tie to, you know, the guaranteed outcomes we're trying to create. And then I'd say the third, you know, the third leg of that stool, when we start to introduce payment capabilities, then the dynamics really shift because all the economics are based on kind of the total volume that's going to flow through this relationship. That's going to have some sort of payment on the back end that we're going to be able to monetize in some form or fashion. And so we can take the monetization of the payment and use that to kind of, you know, fund the technology and services we're bringing to bear. And again, create a very easily digestible, holistic, pricing structure that says, look, if for every dollar of volume that's going to come through this solution, we're going to take a certain percentage basis point fee from that. And that basis point fee is going to cover, you know, everything that we're doing from a technology services and payment perspective. And it becomes a real win-win for us and our customers.
No, that's great. I think it's aligned with the way software business and technology is moving forward, meaning that it's getting more specialized because yep. What you do is very specialized. And if the company that has different specialty, maybe their business is healthcare or maybe their business is education or other things that they do. And then they want to do what the functions you guys perform. Probably it's not going to be, in the exact quality and in the same way that you do, because that's the only thing you do. So you can specialize on that. And that kind of a specialization helps the customers of you to really stay at the core competency that they have and move faster and stay focused. And then you can really take care of that part of the business and move forward. So that makes perfect sense to me. And that probably can bring, customer loyalty to you, and also the business can prove itself that you are adding value in what you do, and then take some of this value, of course, as income to maintain the business and show profitability on your side.
Yeah, and I think you hit on a really important point there, the kind of loyalty, and I would characterize it as stickiness, right? I think that's a dynamic that you see out there in the marketplace now, which is, I think it's important for all leaders of technology companies to really, self-evaluate, are we a commodity solution? Are we providing a commodity solution that's easily replaceable? Or are we doing things that are differentiated enough and that are impactful enough to our customers' businesses that really make, the switching cost very high and very painful? And, I think that's really important for leaders to focus on, because to the extent that you are, providing a commodity solution, one that's easily replaceable, you're going to deal with churn dynamics that are going to be very challenging for your business. And somebody's always going to come along with, fancy messaging and new technology and new ways of looking at things. And if you're not doing the same and you're being somewhat complacent, you're gonna feel the pain of what that looks like from a churn and a customer stickiness perspective.
I think what you have done, it's really about offering software for people that may just need the technology, but also you have offered the package that comes with some services that has its own benefit. Of course, the third way that you go and just do the revenue sharing, and that's a different way to kind of utilization. But thinking about just software and also the option of software with some services around it, I think that's something that a recipe or prescription that can exist for many other SaaS companies that today may provide just the technology and may not have about. Actually, they can go one step further and offer the solution, not just the technology, and in the way that you are doing that, essentially you provide that option and customers have both options. That's great. So maybe some customers actually what they need is just the technology and software and nothing else, but also maybe some others are, in a situation that can be very helpful to them when they receive that advisory services or some other services that you can provide. So I think that can be very helpful to many SaaS companies, probably if they think about it. And most of us are tend to just do what we have done in the past rather than really just rethink from time to time and say, this is the best way to do it.
Yeah, I think, it goes back to, listening to the customers. Again, that diagnose before you prescribe, when you get into those initial conversations, you can kind of understand what's going on in their world. And that's what's so critically important. So you're going to have companies that when you talk to them, you can say, okay, this is a do-it-yourselfer company, right? Like they've got infrastructure, they've got people, they want the technology and they want to do it themselves. But then you're going to hear, things that would give you an indication that a company is saying, look, we're tapped out. We're being asked to do more with less. We're super lean. We don't have the bandwidth, whether it comes in the form of change management, whether it comes with just kind of tactical execution of what's needing to be implemented, those sorts of things. And so when you get into those conversations, it's a different message that they want to hear, right? They want to hear how we can make a more kind of turnkey solution, how we can complement or supplement what they're doing in-house versus that do-it-yourselfer mentality that's like, look, we've made the investments in people and we have the infrastructure. We just need the great technology to achieve what we're trying to achieve. So there's a maturity curve there, but there's also, again, a DNA that's embedded within these organizations that you kind of have to pull out and understand what's going to resonate most when you're having those conversations. And I'd say another dynamic that is taking place currently is, you know, you call it, even 5 years ago, you were, you know, in the areas that we play in, you know, APAR, procurement, B2B commerce, you know, there was a lot of first mover activity, early adopter activity, people, you know, buying a solution like that for the first time. And that's a different conversation than folks that have been down a path. They understand what worked and what didn't work. So you can suss that out really quickly too, when you're talking to a customer that's sitting there, or a prospect or a customer sitting there saying, look, I've tried to buy the great technology. I implemented it. You know, it didn't achieve what we wanted to achieve. And now we're looking for something different, versus somebody that's out in the marketplace saying, hey, we've done this completely in-house with our own technology, our own people, manual, whatever. That's a different conversation too, in terms of folks that have been down that road before from a technology purchase perspective, to folks that, you know, haven't been down that road before and are a little more naive on that front.
When it comes to any software company, you see that, you know, any software company, maybe during the different periods of time, as some of those parameters are external, it may go through a phase of innovation, and it, then it may go through the phase of expansion. Maybe sometime in the market, valuations are very generous, money is cheap, then they can raise easily or easier. It's easier to raise money at a lower cost, and then they can expand faster on the business side. And then there are some time that maybe it's the innovation time, and they need to really focus and innovate and add the value on the product side, and then innovate. From your perspective, how do you manage that kind of cycles that, you know, you see in the market? And sometimes maybe you can move faster, and sometimes maybe it's not super efficient to move faster, but it's efficient to really spend more R&D and innovate and improve what you have. How do you see that going, you know, or from your perspective, you may say the way you are running the business, the cycles may not be as radical as it might have been for another company that might be a venture-backed company or infusing a lot of cash.
Yeah, I think, you know, certainly the cycle we're in now with, you know, high interest rates and things of that nature, you know, make it, you know, more challenging, you know, to make those, you know, make those longer term investments. But I would say, you know, the cycles that we really focus on, if you know, we, like I said, we've been in business for 25 plus years. So we've been through all the up cycles and the down cycles and what comes with it. And I'd say in periods of times where the cycles are challenging from a macro perspective, that's often when we find they're the best times to innovate. So it's kind of counterintuitive, but you know, when the market is hot and when there's people that are willing to make investments and there's, you know, active, willing buyers out there, you want all your focus, attention on and intention, not all of it, but most of your focus and attention on, you know, seizing that opportunity, you know, winning as much business as you can, being laser focused on that. When there's macroeconomic cycles that are not as favorable and companies are kind of battening down the hatches and they're getting more conservative when it comes to technology purchases and things of that nature, those we find are the best times to kind of say, look, let's focus internally on what we can control, innovation, you know, improving processes, maybe, you know, changing the structure of the organization, spans and layers, you know, kind of getting your house in order while there's some, you know, turbulence going on outside of our four walls. You know, that has what has worked well for us is really kind of timing the market and the cycles from the perspective of when is it the right time to be really focused on, you know, go to market execution, you know, in a very kind of day to day, hand to hand combat perspective, versus when are the right cycles to say, look, there might be not as much opportunity and activity going on. Let's focus on the things we can control and really optimize what we're doing, whether it's innovation, whether it's process improvements, things of that nature. So that's kind of how we've thought about it, you know, historically. And I think it's a, you know, it served us well because, as we know, every cycle has a counter cycle right on the heels of it. And so you want to make sure you're really prepared for when things take that swing back up. You know, you're really prepared more than others or better than others, you know, to take advantage of that upward swing. And you don't want to be caught in a situation where, you know, upward swing happens and you're distracted doing all sorts of other things that might have you miss the opportunity.
Yeah, and I would say companies that stay close to the shore or they are fully profitable, like, you know, you guys, they have an advantage to really look
at those great point.
In a much better way and act more strategically during those cycles versus, because most often bad things happen very quickly, meaning that it goes from, you know, a good cycle to a more, you know, tricky cycle or down market much faster. And then from down market, it's taking time to go back to, you know, to the case that then they can easily, you know, run the business and raise money and everything. So definitely that also is in your advantage when you are profitable.
Yeah, I think there's two embedded advantages there. One is if you're a business that's producing cash flow like we have, you're not reliant totally on outside parties to be able to make those investments, right? You're just using the cash flow that your business is generating to be able to make some of those, you know, medium and longer term investments without, you know, having to go outside and deal with, you know, the conditions that might be impacting cost of money or things of that nature. And then I'd say the other advantage of that is what we touched on earlier on the profitability growth balance. If you have that DNA in your organization around, you know, focus on profitability and understanding how to remain profitable even in the face of headwinds, you can pivot a lot quicker. So when those bad times come, and sometimes they come out of nowhere, you know, COVID, a perfect example of that, you know, and your world gets turned upside down. Having a leadership team and an organizational DNA that can quickly say, okay, there's some headwinds that we're going to be facing. Maybe we're not going to get to the revenue goals that we had set out to, but we can sure as heck adjust what we're doing on the things we can control, which is on the expense side, to say, look, we may not get to the revenue outcomes that we were looking for, but, you know, we still can manage to EBITDA outcomes. And that's, again, if you don't have that DNA in your business, if you don't have that, you know, those swings at the plate that, you know, you get those learnings from, it can be a lot more difficult to be as nimble as you need to be when it comes to, you know, matching expenses to whatever the revenue situation is.
Fantastic. I'm going to ask you as my last question, if you could please, you know, suggest a book that either you personally liked or professionally.
For sure. Yeah, I think I'll do a couple if you don't mind. So I think, you know, a big part of our, you know, our culture has been driven by a book that's not necessarily new, but Good to Great by Jim Collins, or any of Jim Collins' material we have found to be very practical, you know, giving you that right kind of North Star of how to think about your business, both long term and near term. So a lot of the principles that are embedded in our DNA come from, you know, the fundamentals of Good to Great. I talked about the BHAG earlier. I talked about working back from that BHAG, but also, you know, understanding that most companies don't die from starvation. They die from overeating. So having that DNA of making sure that we're focused on, you know, the right things and that we're not spreading ourselves all over the place and trying to do too many things at once. But having that laser focus on what those most important things are and maniacally executing against that, it's a big principle that has, you know, has been a big part of our business. And I'd say more recently, there's, I think, some business operating systems out there that I have found at different stages to be very helpful. So I think EOS, Traction is the name of the book, Jeter Wickman. I think for maybe younger or earlier stage companies is a really great, you know, great business operating system that you can align your management team around to have a real good cadence to your business. And again, good ways in which you plan and hold people accountable. As we've grown and scaled, we've found Scaling Up by Vern Harnish to be, you know, a really great fit for where we are at in our life cycle here. A lot of the same principles of EOS, but kind of more geared towards companies that are kind of a little later stage and trying to kind of make that leap from 50 to 100 million or 100 to 300 million. And I think those are really important things. You know, you can go to, you know, Rockefeller Habits is another one, but it's really important things that you can align your leadership team and your broader organization around that kind of really set the the way in which your cadence as a business operates. And that's really important, because especially in the world we live in now where things are changing dramatically on a daily basis, you gotta have a cadence in place that, you know, allows you to proactively identify what's changing and then, you know, adjust your strategy, in a very structured fashion. So those are some that I would throw out there as, really been valuable to me personally as a leader, but also to our organization as a whole.
Great suggestions. Again, thank you very much, Matt, for joining us. It was great having you here.
Thanks, Armin. Have a great day.
Thank you for listening to SaaS Scaled with Armin Ashraghi. For show notes and any resources mentioned in today's episode, go to saasscaled.com. If you're enjoying our show, give us a 5-star review and share on LinkedIn. And be sure to subscribe for any updates on future episodes. Thanks for listening. This episode is brought to you by Curve, the modern no-code analytics solution, the tools you need to take action with your data on a platform built for maximum scalability, security, and cost efficiencies. If you're ready to reduce complexity and dramatically lower costs, then contact us today at curve.com. That's Q-R-V-E-Y.com.